things every 13-year-old should know. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know. I'm here with my best friend and co-host, Wilder. How you doing, Wilder?
I'm doing pretty good. What about you?
I'm doing really well. I feel like this week was like a really good week. Weather was nice overall. Had a lot of soccer. Soccer starting back up again. My parents got their first doses of the vaccine. All looking pretty good. What about you? What have you done this week?
That's great to hear. I've been outside a lot because the weather's been insanely nice. And it's gone up even more today, so I'm probably going to head out a bit later.
Yeah, same. And now that, like, the clocks have set back, it gets darker a lot later out, which is nice, which means you can stay out longer. Besides the point, here with us today, entrepreneur, very successful businessman in general, Michael Solomon. Woo!
Hello. Thrilled to be
Hi.
Here.
Hi. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited to learn what I should have known when I was 13. I guess maybe I'm going to be sharing what I wish I had known when I was 13, but
I wish somebody was doing a podcast for everything you need to know when you're 51, because I need someone to tell me what the heck I'm supposed to know.
Why don't you make that? I mean,
I could.
I mean, you've already kind of made a lot of things, right? I think you've started several companies, I think two or three, and you've written several books as well.
So far, one book, three nonprofits, and three for-profit companies. And I don't think I'm done yet, but I'm really enjoying what I do. So that's half the battle.
Wow. That's insanely impressive. Four for-profit companies and three nonprofit. How did you even start all of those? Like, tell us a bit about a rundown of what each one is for.
Sure. I think to answer your question, one at a time was definitely the way to do that. Like doing multiple at once would be hard. Although there are people, I don't know if you're familiar with the company Square that does credit card swiping. Like that, the guy who founded that company also founded Twitter, and he runs them both simultaneously. And he started them in a very close succession to each other. So the first business I have is called Brickwall Management, and we manage musicians. And then eventually we started managing other kinds of creative people like directors, which is how I know Mr. Counts, not Wilder, but the older Mr. Counts. We work together in that capacity. And then as the music industry sort of got into a lot of trouble because of file sharing when the internet came around and all of a sudden people didn't need to buy music anymore, the music industry was in rough shape. So we thought we probably need to figure out something else to do in case we can't make a living from music. So we started the second company, which is called 10X Management. And it was just taking the idea of being a talent agent and bringing it to a new industry. So we help tech professionals find and negotiate their deals just the same way what we were doing for musicians. You know, if you guys keep growing this podcast, you guys are going to need an agent, and you're going to have to find somebody who's going to help you navigate all of the business parts of being podcasters and being influencers.
Going between music and tech, was it like similar, and how did the talent and like people you worked with in both categories vary?
It's a great question. There's a lot of similarities about the talent across the industries that we work in. So technology, music, directors, entrepreneurs, talented people have a lot in common. And actually, you kind of just sort of touched on what our book is about, because we figured there were not a lot of people in the world who had dealt with this broad a range of talent. And that's where the idea for the book came from, is what do they all have in common and what do companies need to think about as they're dealing with talent. And people often didn't think about their employees and their companies as talent, but that's really what it is. We're all the talent.
Yeah. Speaking of talent, I know you worked with Bruce Springsteen and John Mayer. What was that like?
Very different between the two of those guys. So for Bruce, I went on tour with him on and off for a couple of years and did all different jobs on the road, everything from dealing with the merchandise, the t-shirts and the hats and all of that stuff, and getting to the venue and counting it all in with the people who sell it at the venue. And then after the show is over, you stay and you count back the inventory they give you back, and then you count the money, and then you have to deliver the money, and it's all sort of complicated. So going on the road with Bruce was amazing because I got to see this entire operation that goes around the world. And every day or every couple of days, they put up these giant shows that I would think take years and years and years to build. And they build it in a day and it's gone the next day. And it's pretty amazing. And then when we worked with John, it was kind of fun because we got to start at the beginning with somebody and then get to that level of those size venues that Bruce was playing during our time with him, and sort of seeing how you, you know, on the one hand, I got to see the finished product of people who had been, you know, touring with Bruce for years and what that looked like. And with John Mayer, we sort of built that over a very short number of years, because his rise to success was about a 3-year period from, you know, more or less zero to playing arenas like Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Wait, so did you discover him?
That's always an interesting question. I was not the first person to recognize that talent. By the time I met John, he had a co-manager who we worked with. He had a lawyer. He had an independent record label that had signed him. So there was a lot going on by the time we got there. But his fan base was still, you know, fairly developing. He was playing small clubs at the time, and over that next few years, he grew and grew and grew and grew, and it was amazing. And if I'm honest, it was one of the most exciting things to see somebody's dreams come true that quickly. And he worked incredibly hard for it, and he's super talented and he's super smart, but it was pretty amazing to see how quickly that happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy in only a matter of 3 years. And you said you started with him pretty much from the beginning, so like finding talent like that and then working with someone to like such a high level of, I guess, performance and talent, I mean, that's just phenomenal. Has there been anyone else you've worked with since then in the artist music industry at all?
I'm trying to think if the other people that we've worked with are people that you would know. So there's an artist from Brooklyn named Citizen Cope, who's not actually originally from Brooklyn, who we worked with for a number of years, and we saw a lot of growth. He had been around for quite a while before we started working with him, and it didn't go to the same levels as John Mayer, but it was really fast and awesome growth. And it came, you know, it always looks like it's overnight growth, but it's years in the making, because he was working on his music long before we met him, and he had already had two major label deals. And then the third one was The Charm. And we got very lucky, because he was a talented guy and it was the right time. And we came up with the right plan and he had the right attitude. And there were a lot of pieces that made it work. And the other person we work with, who your audience might know, I think they would know at least one of her songs, is Vanessa Carlton, who has a song called 1,000 Miles that if you play,
yes,
you will know.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite songs. Wow. You worked with her? That's awesome.
We actually still work with her. She's
fantastic. Oh, wow.
She's got a new album coming out very, ooh, very soon. So
good, yeah, to know.
Yep.
Working in the music industry so much, like, do you play any instruments at all, or do you kind of just manage it? Did he like pick up anything after?
The only keyboard I can play is this kind of keyboard. I held up my computer keyboard. I can't even play the radio. I'm so bad at music. I'm not kidding. I'm not being humble. I have no musical talent. I can hear some stuff, but like, I can't play anything. I can't sing to save my life. I would embarrass everybody. It's pretty hardcore about how, and I also don't write any code. So representing software engineers, I don't know how to do what they do either, but they don't want me to write code for them, and they don't want me to help them with music. They want me to help them with career, right, and business.
About like career and business and discovering talent. I mean, I kind of understand a bit about like finding talent for musicians, I guess, like if they're making good music, but how do you like discover talent in the like technology industry?
That's a really smart question. Since, you know, I don't know how to code, how could I evaluate those people? And the easy and short answer is we use our existing people to evaluate the new people we consider bringing on, because that way we get somebody who's an expert at each area, and that works out really well so far. Part of, you know, one of the things that I think is really important to know about talent is it's not just the talent. It's not just the voice or how well somebody plays guitar. talent goes a lot further than that. And in order to really be successful, for the most part, that talent has to get into your business savvy and how well you can promote yourself and how well you can choose the people who you want to work with. You know, if you're the greatest musical talent in the world and you pick the wrong manager, the wrong booking agent, the wrong record label, you're probably not going to have a very good career. So just having the instincts about working with the right people is really important.
Yeah. I mean, talent can only take you so far in the first place. And then behind that, like there's probably so many things that go on behind the scenes. Like even when you're just like watching TV and like seeing someone perform, or even like watching anything on TV, there's probably so much that goes behind the scenes that you would probably wouldn't even think of.
There is. There's so much hard work. I mean, you know, we were talking about John Mayer coming up in those years. He was getting up at the crack of dawn, going to radio stations, doing interviews, performing. Then he would be, you know, doing press and media all day long, then go to the show, okay, then go to sound check, then do more media, then go to the show, then not be able to go to sleep after the show because you're kind of amped up. And then it all starts again the next day really early. And he was working so, so hard. And almost everybody who makes it goes through those phases. And then once they make it really big, they can dial that back a little bit and be more selective about what they do. But it is no joke, a lot of work, not just what you see on the stage.
Right. Yeah.
All the stuff you're talking about, like waking up at the crack of dawn, how much of that did you as the manager have to do?
Oh, we had to do, I mean, one of us, there were three of us involved. One of us usually went to all of those things with him. So we were doing it too, but it wasn't as nonstop. And we also didn't have to perform. One of the things that people forget is that if you're doing interviews all day long, talking all day long, and then you have to sing that night and you're not getting enough sleep, you know, your voice is an instrument and it needs a certain amount of care in order to stay healthy and strong. And that's sort of, you know, that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. People, you know, I've heard many artists say, like, the more stuff you stick in my day, the less good the show is going to be. And it's finding that balance, because, you know, all that stuff you do, all that promotion you do is at the beginning what gets people to the show. So if you don't do that, you can play a perfect show to an empty room. But if you do all promotion, you're going to have a full room, but you're not going to be able to put on a great show. So it's about, like most things in life, it's about finding the right balance.
Right. Yeah. 100%. I mean, just you explaining it sounds like he had such long days, and then performing after. I mean, I don't think I could do that at all, let alone I can't sing either. So I was definitely going to do it.
There's a word called grit. Do you guys know that word?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that what separates people who succeed, especially in places in fields that are really competitive, like entertainment and sports, is people who have grit. Yes, you need talent. That's for sure. But talent is not enough. You need grit. You need to be willing to work really hard. There's a chapter in our book where a manager, a very famous music industry manager, who, you know, managed Kings of Leon and Kesha and Leonard Skinner and all like tons and tons and tons of huge, huge, amazing acts. And he said one of the things that he looks for in his talent is the people who will break the tie. Because you're always, as an artist, you're always up against somebody else. The radio station's going to add your song, or they're going to add somebody else's song. You're always competing in a healthy way. And he wants to choose acts who will always go the extra mile so they break the tie. And I thought that was a really insightful piece of information from Ken Levitan.
You know, I really never thought of music as a competitive thing, but like learning more about like all the stuff that happens behind it, it sounds competitive like sports, which is crazy to me because most people would never even really think about that. Like about breaking the tie, does the manager have like a part of that, or is it all the talent in that situation?
The manager absolutely has a part of that. And the manager's part in that is often before they're even at that radio station or at that thing, the manager is the one figuring out, usually, should we even do this? Is this worth doing? And that's and blocking and tackling, so the, if you know that expression, so the artist doesn't get burnt out and doesn't get worn out, and you're choosing you want to fill up as much time as they're willing and able to work, but you want to fill it up with the best stuff. So you're constantly looking at the opportunities and deciding which is the right one and what goes with the strategy for how we're marketing this act. To your point, there is so much that goes on behind the scenes. Every successful act that you know, with there are a couple of exceptions to this, has a manager, has a booking agent, has a record label, which is filled with different departments. They have a publicist, they have a tour manager, they have tour staff, they have people who deal with their merchandising, they have a publisher, they have an accountant. I mean, it is like when you think about the size of these teams for these artists, there's a lot going on.
Right. That's why when like people win Grammys or Oscars or awards, they think like so many people, and you probably haven't even heard of them.
Yeah.
Because they do all like the behind the scenes work. But at the end of the day, like you, like people like you, you're the kind of people that make all of that happen. You know, it's a team effort, kind of similar to a sport. You know,
it's true. And those thank yous, you know, even though they're boring for the, you know, 999,995 people who are not mentioned, it is very rewarding for those who get mentioned in those thank yous, because that's a big public acknowledgement of your contribution. And that does matter and it does feel good.
Yeah.
This is a bit off topic and a bit on topic, but I just had to ask. You started Musicians on Call. It's like, to me, it's such a cool idea. And I want to know like why you as a person started that and like tell the audience a bit of what it's about.
Sure, absolutely. So Musicians on Call is a nonprofit organization that brings live and recorded music to the bedsides of patients in healthcare facilities. So to just sort of make it a little bit more real, it's a knock, knock, knock on the door of the hospital room, and a volunteer walks in and says to a patient or to their family, "We have a volunteer musician here who would love to play for you. May we have them come in?" And the first thing that happens is that person is really excited because they just got a choice about having control over their life, whether they want the music or they don't want the music. Very few people in a hospital walk in and offer you choices. They usually say, "I'm here to take your blood. I'm here to take your blood pressure. I'm here to, you know, take you to this procedure," or whatever it is. So that's really good. And then they go in and they play at the bedsides of patients. Over the last year, because of COVID, we had to switch to a digital model. So we've been doing it over video chat, which has been pretty effective. It's been pretty amazing to do it that way. And because we've been doing it that way, we've been able to reach even more people than ever. That was the first part of your question. The second part of your question was, how did it start? So there's a gentleman and a friend of mine named Vivek Tiwari, who is a fantastic Broadway producer, and actually the person who introduced me to Michael Counts, which I am very grateful for. He won a Grammy this week, by the way, for Jagged Little Pill, which he produced, which is amazing. And he and I started bringing a few musicians to play in a recreation room in a hospital. So the audiences would range from, I don't know, 5 to 20 people. And it was very pleasant. And one night a nurse walked in and said, there's a couple people who were too sick to come down the hall to this room. Would you be willing to go to their rooms? And we did it that night. And we were so inspired and blown away by the electricity change in the room. Like what happened when we played at the bedsides of patients was amazing. And we wrote a business plan that night. That's how it started. And it took us a couple of years after that to raise the money to really get it going. But 21 years later, you know, we've played for almost 1 million people. We're all over the country. We're the largest provider of music in healthcare facilities in the country and probably the world, although I can't prove the latter point. So it's pretty exciting.
That's like such a cool thing to hear. I mean, that's just like a thoughtful thing too, from like you as a person, because I bet that like makes some like people in the hospitals years even.
It is amazing the reactions that people give us from their experiences. And I'll tell you the surprise that I didn't know. I mean, I started that when I was in my 20s, so not 13, but not that far away. And we thought we were starting a program for people who were sick and people who were dying. And what we actually discovered is those people really benefit a lot. And you guys want to take a guess who benefits maybe the most?
Who?
Elderly?
Nope. This is actually something I wish I knew when I was 13. The musicians and the volunteers, because it feels so good to do good for other people that they get the most out of it. This is the dirty little secret I wish I knew. If you want to be happy, go help somebody else. It'll make you happier than doing something for yourself. That's why I founded 3 nonprofits, because it just feels really good.
Yeah.
About like 3 nonprofits, I knew I heard you had 3 companies by the time you were 30. That's a lot.
Two of those were nonprofits and one was a for-profit. And then
how did you manage all of that, like, at once? Like, it's such a young age, like 30 years old. I know it, like, it's not old, but like, it seems like managing 3, I mean, it's still a young age, managing like 3 companies.
The big secret for this is delegating, is building the right team around you, the right people around you, treating them with respect and kindness, and helping them build and grow into their best selves, and then feeding the stuff out. I mean, I have a really great work-life balance. I get to spend a lot of time with my kids. I spend way too much time watching TV, and I still am involved in 3 companies and 3 nonprofits. And it's only because there's enough staff in all of those places that I can play the right kind of role and add sort of strategic guidance and have ideas, but I'm not doing everything. There's other people that do things. Musicians on Call has a staff of about 18 people now.
Wow.
I think something I've learned like throughout this interview was the staff is way more important than you think. I usually think of like the main thing as like the talent, but now like learning from you, like all the stuff that goes on behind, that's just so cool to me.
And the staff is talent. Like, that is part of how I think of them. And one of the things that I try and do, and I, you know, I think I succeed more than I fail, but I try and encourage people to stretch and grow as quickly and as much as they can. And sometimes they grow and then they leave you because they're ready for their next thing. And sometimes they grow and they stay and you just get the benefit of somebody who's better and better and better. And it works out really well.
Here on the podcast, we have a few questions that we ask everybody.
Bring it.
What is something that, well, you kind of already hinted at this a bit, but what's something that you wish you knew when you were 13?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to that point because it's really one of the biggest things. I'll expand on it. So helping people, and that's part of a whole suite of ideas that comes from a discipline called positive psychology. And really quickly, what positive psychology is psychology was originally invented to take people who had mental health problems and make them normal, make them healthy. And positive psychology said, we're going to take normal people and see if we can make them happier. So I spent time, even though this is not my field, studying how do I live a happier, better life, a more joyful life. One thing is helping other people. Another thing is grit, which we talked about a minute ago, meditation. I'm just trying to think of some of the other principles, emotional regulation. So you really understand who you are and you take time to, you know, when your friend says or does something to you that makes you really angry, rather than just quickly jumping back with a reaction, let it sink in, take a minute, take a breath. And these are all soft skills that the world calls soft skills. And I assure you, if you master this kind of stuff, your career will be fine.
And another question we'd like to ask is, what's a piece of advice you'd give to 13-year-olds out there that are watching this or listening to this?
And want to follow kind of like your career?
I think that the biggest thing, and I'm sort of reiterating, is, you know, find things you're passionate and that you love and that make you feel good to do. Don't, like, it's very hard to live your whole life chasing money and doing something you hate for money. You know, we one of the things that's just a reality is we don't live forever. We only have a certain amount of time on the planet. So, and the younger you are, the more, especially in this country, like sort of the idea of like, I have an endless life seems sort of there for you, but it's not endless. And you want to be intentional about the choices that you make. So do things you love and do things that are going to make you feel good more than that are going to make you money. Yeah, obviously I have to have enough money, but I don't know if you've ever heard this, but above a certain salary level, there's no correlation between more money and more happiness. You have to have your basic needs met, but once you get above that, you could have $1 billion and you're no happier than somebody who has a lot less than that.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for everyone who is tuning in and listening. We'll see you next week.
My pleasure to be here. Lots of fun.
Thank you.
I love what you guys are doing. Keep it up. Help somebody else too.
I hope everyone who's listening in enjoyed this episode. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know.
Be sure to follow us on social media.
And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
One more thing. If there's anything you'd like to know about,
or if you have an idea of someone you'd like to hear us talk with,
get in touch with us at thingseverythirteenyearoldshouldknow.com.
Thanks again.